From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Accelerate. He's coming down to the 16th pole in front. Thunderstorm on the inside is next. Then Mendelssohn, Gunavera, and Yoshida on the far outside. They're coming to the wire. And Accelerate wins the Breeders' Cup Classic for John Sadler.
Wondergood Odds in front, and she's dashed away in the Queen's Plate. Ahead by a century and a second. But there's no doubt who's the best today. And it's all about Wonder Godot, Wonder Woman herself, demolishing them in the Queen's Plate.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And they bump there. Game winner on the outside takes the lead. On the inside, it's Nick Gold, who fights on but will be second best. As they come down to the line, he doesn't know how to lose. He's game winner in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. They come to the final 16th. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside. Then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome. Justify has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone. Welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. That's Barron and Pontiff. Happy to have you with us for the next 2 hours as we continue to edge ever closer to that first Saturday in May. And yeah, the eyes of the racing world focused on Oaklawn Park later this afternoon in Hot Springs, Arkansas, with two divisions of the Rebel Stakes, the only qualifying points race along the road to the Kentucky Derby this weekend. And in case you're wondering, yeah, 49 days, 10 hours, 48 minutes, and 9 seconds until that run for the roses. And Jude, the news coming out last week that the folks at Oaklawn would be willing to split that race and divide the points and the totals and all of those types of things in order to help trainers who are looking for a place to run their three-year-olds and prep their three-year-olds for the Kentucky Derby outside of California, help the California horsemen who are looking to do that because there is no racing now at Santa Anita and they need a place to do it. So Oaklawn stepping up, and congratulations to them for making that move. And we have two rock-solid races and the return of juvenile champion Game Winner.
Yeah, both races are excellent. It was very nice of Oaklawn Park to come up with the money, $500,000 they put up to split that race. They said they needed 20 horses. They got 19. They split it anyway. So they've bent over backwards basically to get the horses the race they need. And it, you know, it's very typical of the Sala family, who's owned Oaklawn Park for a long, long time, and they love the game. So congratulations to them, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see those two horses back in action. They've been top derby lists for a long time, and we finally get to see them. They've kind of been like the ghost horses. Everybody talks about them, but nobody sees them, and they've both been training very well, so we expect big things today.
Yeah, talking about the two Bob Baffert entrants, Improbable and the juvenile champion Game Winner. Now, the two divisions of the Rebel Stakes are going to be race 8 and race 10 at Oaklawn this afternoon. Game Winner will go in the second division, race number 10. He is 4-5 on the morning line in his 3-year-old debut. Improbable going in the first of those two divisions. And he is even a bigger favorite. He is 3-5 on the morning line. So both Baffert horses, on paper anyways, looking like absolute horses to beat in those two races.
Yeah, well, Improbable got in the easy half of the split, you know, he really stands out in there, especially the way he's been training. The private clockers love him, and he's a beautiful horse. I saw a picture of him coming off the track, actually a little video the other day, and he looks like a beast. He's just beautiful, so he should be tough. And Game Winner, undefeated. He's kind of like the Rodney Dangerfield of undefeated 2-year-old champions.
Yeah.
Some people knock him. Some people don't like him. He's done everything right. And he continues to train well. His training pattern is a thing of beauty. And so he should be very tough. He's got a little bit more competition in his half.
Yeah, no trainer in the history of the Rebel Stakes has won more Rebel Stakes than trainer Bob Baffert. And he has 6 to his credit. Hasn't won it since 2016 when Cupid got the victory. Last 2 years went to Todd Pletcher. So we'll see if Baffert can get back on the winning track. He has two big-time chances to do it. Jerry Hollendorfer, another Hall of Fame trainer, back in the limelight again. He has a couple of really good ones with Gunmetal Gray and with Galilean. Galilean, the Calbred, who I think a lot of people are really excited to see this afternoon. He's 3-1 on the morning line, going in the first division against Improbable. And he's a horse, Jude, that has displayed a ton of talent. And before you dismiss him because he's a California bred, just think back to a little horse by the name of California Chrome who proved that he was the real deal.
Well, dude, I'm a California bred, so I'm not going to dismiss him.
That's right.
Top and bottom generations of California bred. He's a very good horse, and he's run some fast speed figures, and there's certain things to like about him. He's a horse you can't just throw out. He's won by open lengths. I have to question the competition he's been facing, but he certainly is a talented horse and not one to sneeze at. So there's good horses in both races. I mean.
Gunmetal Gray. He's a longer shot in his division, race number 10. He's in the second division with Game Winner. But, 10-1 on the morning line. Here's a horse that is a greatest stakes winner, having won the Sham two starts back at Santa Anita. And then last time out, second behind Mucho Gusto in the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis. And I bring up those two horses in particular because we are going to be joined right around 8:35 Eastern by the Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer to talk about those two. And he'll also weigh in, by the way, on the situation at Santa Anita and some of the news coming out of there this past week, which we will have plenty of discussion about over the course of the next 2 hours. But Gunmetal Gray, I've said it before, he's one of my favorite horses in training. I think he's a legit horse, and it'll be interesting to see how he handles himself today at Oaklawn Park.
Well, he had no chance to win the Robert B. Lewis the way the race shaped up, and he ran a terrific race. I know he got beat 4 3/4 lengths by Mucho Gusto, but Mucho Gusto pretty much had the race to himself up front, and Gunmetal Gray's never going to win a race when a horse goes wire to wire because it's not going to be him.
Yep,
he has a tremendous late turn of foot, and his race was excellent. It was a terrific race, and he's a horse to be reckoned with for sure. So it's nice to see him in there. He's got talent. Omaha Beach won by 9 lengths for Richard Mandela. He came back and worked 110-3 at Los Alamitos. That's very un-Mandela like. Mm-hmm. Horse has a ton of speed and a lot of talent, and he had a quarter crack. They patched it. He's been training great ever since, and we'll see what happens.
And if you're wondering about the way the points were divided for the two divisions, the winner of each of those divisions will be awarded 38 points toward a spot in the starting gate of the Kentucky Derby. Second place, 15. Third place, 8. And fourth place will get 4 points. And that's the same for both divisions. So the winner essentially punching their ticket to the Kentucky Derby, even though they won't get the big points total, they're going to get 38. And for most of these horses, many of them already have points, so they'll add that to their total, and that should be enough to get them in. So it's virtually a win and you're in two divisions today.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that 38 points wouldn't get you in the Derby.
Yeah, typically that's the number. I mean, that's well above the number that you would need to get into the starting gate. That may be the only points race being run today for the Kentucky Derby, but it is not necessarily the only Kentucky Derby prep. The private term stakes up at Laurel is another race featuring the 3-year-olds, and it features a pretty good horse in Always Mining, who is going to be the heavy favorite there, 4-5 on the morning line. 3-year-old Gelded Son of Stay Thirsty, trained by Kelly Rubley, who is going to be with us in about 5 minutes from right now after our first commercial break. And Always Mining, a speedy horse. He's answered the bell in each of his last 4 starts, winning impressively. He's a serious racehorse, Jude. Is he good enough to compete with the big names we talked about, like at Oaklawn Park? I don't know, but he's good enough to win this race today.
Yeah, he's a very talented horse, and I'm surprised he didn't really try a points race. But I don't know. Is this race still a win and you're in for the Preakness?
Good question. I think it is.
It has been in the past. I don't see it in the conditions, but sometimes they don't print all the conditions.
Right.
On the PPs. But
I was thinking it was. But it used to be. Whether they've changed that or not, I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway, he's a good horse. He's won his last 4 starts, all by open lengths, and looked really good winning the Miracle Wood. And yeah, I mean, he's legit, and he's Triple Crown nominated. There's only two Triple Crown nominated horses in the private terms, Always Mining and Still Dreaming. So that Still Dreaming's Graham Motion's horse, and he ran seventh in the Sam Davis, so he's going to have to step up his game. But so it's going to be interesting to see how this race pans out and if one of those two horses moves on towards the Kentucky Derby.
Well, again, Kelly Rubley, the trainer of Always Mining, going to join us in just a few minutes. Jerry Hollendorfer, the Hall of Fame trainer, as I mentioned, with us at 8:35 Eastern Time. Then our Industry Star of the Week segment presented by Stuart Morris. And in hour two, we'll spend an awful lot of time talking about the news coming out of Santa Anita this week and the banning of all race day medications at Santa Anita and at Golden Gate. That announcement coming from the Stronach Group, and we'll be visiting with Matt Haggerty of the Daily Racing Forum, who has been covering that story for them. He'll be with us about 9:20 Eastern Time. Jude and I will share our thoughts on the situation as well, and we'll get you ready for this very busy day of thoroughbred racing as we continue down the road to the Kentucky Derby. Quick poll question for you. We want to know your thoughts on that Santa Anita situation. Everybody has come out with an opinion. So many people on social media, as we've seen in this day and age, many people in other forms. But we want to know your thoughts on it. Are you in favor of the Stronach Group decision to ban race day medication at Santa Anita and Golden Gate? And you've got two choices, yes or no. Quite simple. Are you in favor of the Stronach Group decision to ban race day medication at Santa Anita and Golden Gate? Let us know your thoughts. We will share our thoughts later in the program as well. When we come back, Kelly Rubley joins us to talk about Always Mining in the private terms. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Adena Springs Stallion, Mucho Macho Man, a precocious juvenile, a classic three-year-old, and dominant older horse.
Faraji Faraj, Mucho Macho Man, wins the Risen Star.
Mucho Macho Man in front, followed by Himbook, who continues to close ground, but will run out of racetrack as Mucho Macho Man wins the 126th Suburban.
Mucho Macho Man, next to the Risen War, will take charge of Final Man. Mucho Macho Man!
Mucho Macho Man's first crop includes black type runner Bell Laura and TDN Rising Stars Mucho Gusto with trainer Bob Baffert and Fortin Hill in the barn of trainer Chad Brown. In the sales ring, yearlings by Mucho Macho Man have proven popular, selling for up to $170,000, with his first two-year-olds bringing up to $625,000. Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adena Springs. Visit AdenaStallions.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Broken Vow continues to deliver rock-solid results. The top 10 Son of Unbridled has sired nearly 150 black-type stakes horses, 75 black-type stakes winners, and over $71 million in earnings. Among those sired by Broken Vow last season were Chocolate Martini, winner of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks, and Life in Shambles, winner of the Grade 3 Fall Highweight. Sire of Eclipse Champion Champagne Room, Broken Vow has sired additional Grade 1 winners, Unbridled Belle, Rosalind, Sassy Image, and Cotton Blossom. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud. I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Into the stretch, a quarter of a mile left to go. Always Mining asked the question to kick away. Wendell Fong on the inside, but Always Mining now by two. And Grey Magician and Tybalt the far outside, 6 furlongs, a minute, 11.29. Always Mining in the final furlong with authority by 5. Here's Tybalt running into the second spot. In between horses is Grey Magician. They're followed by Wendell Fong. Always Mining does it again. Always Money, a comfortable score by 5.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, and that was Dave Rodman with the call of the Miracle Wood, and Always Mining just rolling right along, racking up a fourth consecutive victory. This afternoon, he will go to the post as a heavy favorite in the private term stakes at Laurel Park, and he is trained by the former middle school science teacher, Kelly Rubley, who is really enjoying her run as a horse trainer now, and she could quite possibly find herself in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May with a very talented runner, but he has to get past this next test first this afternoon. And Kelly with us now here on HRN. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
All right, so what's more challenging, teaching middle school kids science or training a horse like Always Mining?
Probably middle school is more challenging.
Yeah, it seems like this horse just does everything you ask him to do.
He does. He does. He's a lot of fun to have around. He kind of does everything we ask without question, which is nice.
All right, go back to that last race, the Miracle Wood. He goes wire to wire, draws off, wins by 4.5 lengths, is a heavy favorite. That's the way you like to see them win when they're a heavy favorite. Share your thoughts on that performance.
Well, you know, for that race, I actually was thinking that we might get challenged a little bit with some speed, and he just broke so easily and took the lead and was able to go in 24. I couldn't believe that, you know, we were able to get that fraction in there, and then turning for home, we were pretty confident that he had it, and he certainly did.
He just seems to win with consummate ease. You've really taken your time with him and brought him up. If he wins today, are you going to try a points race, or are you going to wait till the Preakness? What do you got planned down the road?
Well, certainly we have to get through today. I do have him nominated to the Bluegrass. We'd have to, you know, we'll see how it goes today. We'd have to take a serious look, probably pointing more toward the Preakness, but, you know, let's see what happens today, I guess.
I'm sure you know this, but is the private terms a winning you're in for the Preakness? It used to be. I don't know if it still is.
It is not. The Tessio, which is the next race on April 20th, is the winning you're in.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, there it is. Okay. And this is a horse, Kelly, Always Mining, that absolutely loves Laurel Park. His 5 career victories have all come at Laurel. He's 5 for 6 there. That has to give you a lot of confidence going into today's race, too.
It does. And, you know, that's probably one of the reasons that we opted to stay there for this race instead of asking a little bit more of him in his next start. I thought trying the 2 turns on his home track where he clearly excels made the most sense, and so we're really hopeful that the 2 turns is not an issue today, and because we know he likes the track, and you know he's comfortable running at Laurel, so this made the most sense to us.
Yeah, as a trainer trying to get a horse to go 2 turns for the first time, and he's not an inexperienced horse by any stretch of the imagination. This is going to be career start number 11 for Always Mining. But as a trainer, what things do you do with a horse in the mornings to try to get them ready to handle that two-turn assignment?
Interestingly, he, you know, the way he gallops in the morning, there's not a whole lot extra that we have to do. He covers the ground incredibly well and breezes just, I mean, it looks as though he could go around again when he's done. So we're hopeful that he's going to do it all himself, honestly. He, it's just his natural way. And each race that he's run at Laurel, he's galloped out extremely strong. And every time I ask Danny after the race, what do you think about two turns? And he says, no problem. I don't think we necessarily had to change a whole lot going into this race in our manner of training. We just had to keep him happy and sound and keep our fingers crossed for today.
Yeah, he's got a really cool pedigree, and he's you know, he just seems to be effortless in what he does. So congratulations and good luck moving forward, because I think he's a really cool horse.
I do, too. And, you know, we'll see what happens today, but regardless, he's certainly proven himself to be a nice horse.
And yeah, no doubt about it.
We really like him.
Kelly, by the way, talking with Kelly Rubley, the trainer of Always Mining, in this afternoon's private term stakes at Laurel Park. Kelly, this horse did not begin his career with you. He came to you, I guess, around September of last year. What do you remember about the first time you started working with him and got to see him on the racetrack?
When he came in, we could tell immediately he had this enormous gallop. His stride is just so long and covers so much ground. But he had, you know, he wasn't as confident as he is now. He was a little nervous about touching his mouth and that sort of thing. So we kind of just had to be really nice and find a comfortable rider for him that has really quiet hands. And he's sort of the type of horse that prefers to be left alone. You just need to sort of manage how fast he goes, because he would gallop. I mean, his cruising speed is pretty darn fast. It's almost a 2-minute lick if you let him every day for a mile and a half. It doesn't faze him. So we don't know what we did differently or how we improved him. I think he was always going to be this nice horse, and essentially he came into me at a time when he was just starting to mature, and so it was pretty much already started for me. The groundwork was already laid.
Reminds me of the Michelangelo line, the statue was in the rock all the time, I just let it out. you just let it out. You let him do his thing, and now he's rewarding you in a big way.
Right. And, you know, I think that's true of all very nice horses. They have it already under control, and we just have to make sure that we keep them happy and sound and out of trouble.
Kelly, what made you give up that job as a teacher? I guess you were also serving as a school administrator at that point. What made you give up that job and say, you know what, I want to get up every day at 4 o'clock in the morning and go to the racetrack and not have any days off? What made you do that?
Oh, that's an interesting question. my family still does not understand the 4 a.m. 7 days a week, and I can't make it to any family functions or holidays. But especially coming from the world of education, where we had summers off and life was a little bit easier. But that being said, I've been riding horses since I was a child, you know, and no matter what I do, whether I had my own horses competing or, you know, training other horses for jumping, et cetera, it's just always been in the background. And so at one point I decided it was time to try to make it my life, and I love it. So it makes a big difference if you get up every morning and you love going to work.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you got to spend time with a couple of top trainers, namely Barkley Tagg and Jimmy Toner. Talk about being around those two individuals and the things you were able to pick up and learn from them.
Well, I would say Barkley was just phenomenal. I mean, he's a very hardworking man. He's an elderly gentleman now and still in the barn at 4 a.m. and at 5 p.m. every day. He certainly taught me a very strong work ethic and what it takes to really be on top of every horse in your barn. So I kind of look at that as his expectations were very high, and I greatly appreciate that at this point in my life, because he taught me how to be a hard worker and how to really put everything you have into the horses in your barn. And that's something that I'm grateful for. Jimmy, I worked for Jimmy briefly as well. he and I came together when I moved back to Fair Hill. One of his owners had purchased a barn here, so I took the job running the string out of Fair Hill. And obviously, both of these trainers have proven themselves in the industry, and it was, you know, it was just a wonderful experience to have the knowledge of both of them at my fingertips when I was trying to start out.
You have the big horse up at Fair Hill. Talk about what an advantage that is for some horses.
Well, Fair Hill just offers so many options. It's, you know, we have a Tapeta track, so this winter that has been crucial, as we all know winter training can be a challenge in the north. But we've only, you know, the Tapeta track has only been closed a handful of times due to ice or large amounts of snow, which usually melts by the next day. So I think that it's given somewhat of an advantage over those at the racetrack, where when it snows or it's icy, they're not able to get out and train, and we have been able to. In the summer, I mean, we have a turf track that we can breathe on as well, and we have acres and acres of hills that we can gallop out in the fields, and it just sort of, not to mention the turnout. You know, I think if I had to be a racehorse, Fair Hill would be where I would want to live. So we have all the amenities to keep them happy and sort of fulfill their life of a racetrack horse, but with all the extras. A bit of a country club for them.
Yeah, very much so. Kind of like Payson Park down in Florida, too, from that perspective. It's quiet. The horses seem to flourish there, and certainly Always Mining is doing that. Kelly, we would be remiss if we let you go without giving us an update on your other big horse, your greatest stakes winner, Divisadero. What's going on with him?
Actually, we're pointing Divisadero to the fairgrounds for next weekend for the handicap. He's also training very well. I have him in Florida and breathed yesterday, and looks like we're headed to fairgrounds and hopeful for a really successful day.
All right, could be a huge couple of weekends for trainer Kelly Rubley as she continues to have her sights set on the road to the Kentucky Derby and then on that older horse turf division with Divisadero next weekend down in New Orleans. Kelly, really appreciate the visit. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and you can wear what you love at embracetherace.com. And all the best later this afternoon in the private terms, and all the best next weekend with Divisadero.
Thank you so much.
All right, Kelly Rubley here on HRRN. Yeah. How about that? She gives up that steady job working as a school administrator and a teacher and says, the heck with it. I'm going to go be a horse trainer. We've heard that story on our Trainer Talk program from so many of the trainers that are in the sport today. It's just this allure of the racetrack that just pulls you back, and you have to be around the horses. You have to be around the game.
And nobody's ever said, I want to go back to being a school teacher.
Not really.
Right? I mean, yeah. She's a very successful trainer, too, so it does make it a little bit easier, but you got to take a shot. I mean, every time somebody takes out their trainer's license, they're taking a chance, because it's not an easy game. And I think it's admirable that she decided, I'm going to do what I really love doing, and she's doing a good job at it too.
Yeah, and again, today could provide her with another milestone victory if she can pull it off in that private terms with Always Mining. All right, Jerry Hollendorfer is in the on-deck circle. He'd be with us right around 8:35 Eastern time. But it's time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty right here in Lexington, Kentucky. Tell you every single week, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, pre-owned vehicle, you go see the Godfather Tony Attiano, you go see Mike Hendricks. They're horse people, they're involved in the sport, and they want to be the dealership of the equine industry in Central Kentucky. And you know what? They've been doing that for a very, very long time. It's the Lexus store of Lexington, and this is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
Going into the month of June 1953, only one thoroughbred in history, Whiskbroom II, had been able to sweep the handicap Triple Crown, consisting of the Metropolitan, Suburban, and Brooklyn handicaps. That had occurred in 1913. The reason for the difficulty in accomplishing the feat was the combination of the variance of distances and the unusually high weights asked to be shouldered by the better horses in these events. In May of 1953, Tom Poole, The startlingly handsome Green Tree Stable Standard Bearer had won the Joe H. Palmer Handicap over 6 furlongs while toting an impost of 130 pounds. Now 4 years old, he had become a horse to be reckoned with at any distance with any impost. In the first leg of the Handicap Triple Crown, the Metropolitan, he toted 130 pounds on an off track over the mile distance. Teddy Atkinson, the gentleman from Canada, who was his regular rider, got Tom Fool to the lead at the top of the stretch and tried to let the Son of Me Now coast to the wire for the win. But Royal Vale made a late charge so that Atkinson had to get into Tom Fool, so to speak, to hold on for the score in a time of 1:35.3. In the Suburban at 1 1/4 miles, Tom Fool was the sounded impost of 134 pounds. And only 1 4-year-old colt, that being Assault, had been asked to carry more and win. No one wanted the lead in the Suburban, so Atkinson put Tom Fool out in front and rated him very nicely until the 16th pull, when Royal Vale came flying and got eyeball to eyeball in the charge to the wire. Atkinson on Tom Fool and Jackie Westrup on Royal Vale had to reach back for all their riding skills to get all they could out of their respective mounts. The two gallant thoroughbreds were locked together, matching strides, thundering for the finish in an absolutely marvelous spectacle of sport. Tom Fool stuck his head in front of the wire to chalk up the laurels in the second leg of the Triple Crown. Royal Vale had actually gained a slight advantage with 100 yards to go, but Tom Fool had courageously refused to back down and came on again with pure grit to win it. Only Greylag, Devil Diver, and 830 had won it with a higher impost. In his next start prior to the final leg, the Brooklyn, Tom Fool captured the Carter Handicap under a burdensome 135 pounds. In the Brooklyn, he was assigned 136 pounds to shoulder for the very testing 12-furlong distance, and not only did he win it, but he won it with authority and then became the first horse in 40 years to accomplish that feat. He then went on to tally 4 more wins that year in winning the Wilson, the Whitney, the Sisson B Mile, and the Pimlico Special. Tom Fool had a year in 1953 that was indeed a watermark in thoroughbred racing. He had gone postward 10 times, all in handicaps, at distances from sprints to grueling routes, and won them all. Need there be any doubt whatsoever that he was dubbed Handicap Horse of the Year, and he was voted Champion Sprinter, if you can digest that. His composite racing record, 30 starts, 21 wins, 7 seconds, 1/3, 1/4. The stamp of greatness is emblazoned with a capital G next to his name, and the story of his capturing the Handicap Triple in 1953 is truly a great moment in racing.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Now standing at Buck Pond Farm, Bet on Red, Wildcat Red.
Wildcat Red runs away to an impressive score in the Hutchison.
After winning the Grade 3 Hutchison, Wildcat Red goes on to win the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth in near record time. Faster than Pulpit, faster than Thunder Gulch, and faster than 49er. Multiple graded stakes winner and Grade 1 performing millionaire, Wildcat Red. Also standing at Buck Pond, V.E. Day. After winning 3 in a row at Belmont and Saratoga, V.E. Day wins the Grade 1 Traverse in one of the most exciting finishes in history with a speed rating of 112.
But here comes V.E. Day with a final try. Who will win the Traverse? It will be Too Close to Call!
Major League Belmont and Saratoga talent, V.E. Day. For more information, contact Buck Pond Farm at www.buckpond.com.
Power.
Cara Conti has won.
Passion.
It's Cara Conti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Cara Conti and O'Donnell. Cara Conti.
Cara Conti, a son of Bernstein out of a Sunday Silence mare with five-time champion Miesque as his third dam. Cara Conti recorded three grade one victories while earning more than $1.9 million. A precocious juvenile, Cara Conti recorded a grade one win at two before taking the prestigious French 2000 Guineas at three, followed by an electrifying stretch run in the Breeders' Cup Mile to defeat older horses with a final time of 1:32 4/5. First crop yearlings by Cara Conti sold for up to $220,000, and his first two-year-olds impressed at the OBS March sale, with a filly breezing in 9 4/5 seconds and selling for $365,000 to Breeze Easy LLC. Cara Conti, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Galilean opens up, quickly putting away the top two, feeling strong, rallying into second, but it's Galilean well clear, and you could find a telescope to find the competition behind Galilean, who will put on another impressive display. Galilean and Flavian Pratt waltz home. A 16th to run, and it's much better clinging to a narrow lead. Sueño, Gunmetal Gray flying on the outside, and Gunmetal Gray, an eye-catching rally to win the sham.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Jude Feld on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Frank Miramati had the call of those two outstanding races, Galilean taking the Cal Cup Derby and Gunmetal Gray winning the sham, both trained by Hall of Famer Jerry Hollendorfer, who has saddled more than 7,500 winners in his Hall of Fame career, still looking for that elusive Kentucky Derby victory, but he has a couple of good ones going to the post later today in two divisions of the Rebel Stakes at Oaklawn Park. He does have Galilean and Gunmetal Gray, and looking forward to this visit here on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. Jerry, welcome to the program. Appreciate the visit.
Thank you.
Looking forward to seeing these two horses strut their stuff this afternoon, and you get to run them in separate divisions because of the situation in California, Oaklawn splitting that race. Let's start with the first division and Galilean. Look back on that performance in the Cal Cup Derby. Very, very impressive.
Well, we were pretty pleased to see the way that he rated. You know, he's shown speed in his other races, and then our horse went out on the lead. He rated perfectly behind horses. So, I don't think we've seen his best yet. So, he has to poke his numbers up a couple points to be right there in contention with Baffert and some of the others. But we feel confident that he's able to do that.
He's won his races so easily. You got to figure there's that extra couple points in the tank, don't you?
Well, I don't know. the proof is when they run. So we'll run them and see how they go. We always walk over with a lot of confidence, but we have total respect for everybody else that's in there because we don't believe that people are just entering just to enter. So. Everybody's trying to win, so we have to beat everybody.
Yeah, and people will dismiss Galilean because he has been running against state-bred competition, and he is a California-bred, and people will say, okay, well, as you just alluded to, maybe he's not quite there with the likes of Improbable and a Game Winner and those types of horses. But Jerry, we remember California Chrome and how impressive he turned out to be. That didn't stop him. And I think you have to kind of be feeling the same way about Galilean at this point, right?
Well, I don't know. We just think that we have a good horse. And he was well meant from the day that he was bought and proved so far to be real good. He got beaten one race, but maybe he would have had a chance to win that one too. Bob Torres is undefeated. So, it'll be tough. And all the other ones, there's other ones that look real good too. you know, Bob's got the best number, you know, the best bio number, and the other ones, are in the 80s, and he has a 96. So if you're using buyer numbers as a tool, then the linesmaker made the right horse the favorite.
Jerry, I mentioned all the victories you've had in your career, more than 7,500 in this Hall of Fame career. You've brought up the name Bob Baffert on a few different occasions, and rightfully so, because you're going to tackle him with the big favorite again this afternoon. What's it like for you to square off with a guy like Bob Baffert day in and day out and to have that rivalry?
Well, you know, we talk about things and everything, too, and, you know, we're rivals, but, you know, we're also friends, too. So, I like to be able to run against the very best. And, you know, we don't have as many horses out in California as they do in other places, but the ones that are out there are tough. And, you know, we get them very, very fit, and they go fast out there. So that's why sometimes when we're on the road, we look pretty good. And Bob's always done very well. So we're always, everybody's always competing against him in the best races. So that's why his name comes up a lot.
Do you watch his horses train in the morning to kind of scout the competition?
You know, I have enough trouble keeping track of my own. So, you know, occasionally I see one of Bob's training, but I'm not looking for him every morning.
Well, Jerry, I've said it for the past few months now. One of my favorite horses in training is Gunmetal Gray, and you'll get to saddle him in the second division of that Rebel Stakes later this afternoon. This is a horse that was so impressive in the Sham, maybe didn't catch a racetrack that was to his liking in the Robert B. Lewis, but he still ran a monster race to be second behind a runaway winner. Share your thoughts on Gunmetal Gray.
Well, I don't know. I did a talk to, Mike rode this horse last time, and we love the way he rides. But, I thought the horse got back a little too far for the way the track was that particular day. And then, you know, when they split the race out here, we were wanting to get Mike on our horse again, but we didn't know how it was going to split. So we had Pratt work Gunmetal Gray, and he likes the horse, and he told his agent, make sure and try to ride that horse if we could ride him. So, you know, here again, you know, our numbers compared to some of the other ones in the race, they're not as high. You know, Omaha Beach has a big number, but that was in the swap. Otherwise, you know, he's similar to our numbers. And then here again, you know, you have Game Winner. He's the logical favorite in that race, and he's run big numbers and looks like a very tough horse. You know, our opinion, which means nothing, is we thought that the horses that we did see of Baffert's, we thought that Improbable was training better than Game Winner, but I mean, people always say that kind of stuff, and frequently they're wrong. So that's just one impression that we had.
Well, the way that the race kind of set up for Gunmetal Gray and the Robert B. Lewis gave the edge to Mucho Gusto. I mean, you pretty much made an easy lead, and your horse has that nice turn of foot at the end. So it was a uphill battle, but I was really impressed with him. You know, Mike's not lying when he says he loves Gunmetal Gray. He's been talking about him all Derby season long, and his last race was really good. I think he's coming into this race good, and if the favorite does stub his toe, you have a bang up chance to win this one.
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, Mike told me he thinks that Gunmetal Gray can run as far as horses run, and you know that might be a little bit unusual for his particular breeding. But that's what Mike thought, and he's been on a lot of good ones for me. That's for sure.
Talking with Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jerry, your first Derby starter came in 2003 with Eye of the Tiger, your most recent last year with Instilled Regard. Talk about the one thing that you have learned, the most important thing you have learned from continually getting to the Kentucky Derby that might help you this year, maybe even to get over the top.
Well, the important thing to learn, I think, is that the horse has to take you there. You don't take him there. He takes you there. So, you know, we thought that we had a good chance when we took Battle of Midway, and we thought that we had a good chance with Instilled Regard last year. Both those horses ran pretty good. So, you know, I think you have to have a lot of luck, and you know, the horses have to stay sound in order to get to run in the Derby. So that's just my thoughts on it. Off the top of my head.
Your other Derby horse, Instagrand, he ran a pretty good race coming back. How'd he come out, and what's next for him?
You know, I thought Instagrand ran a great race, and, you know, I thought Javier had to start riding him a little bit sooner than he really wanted to. If he could have sat a little longer, I think we would have run a little bit better. And as it was, we didn't get beaten that far. Anyway, so the next start for our horse, maybe if they get everything straightened out at Santa Anita, would be the Santa Anita Derby. But, I mean, we're nominated everywhere. And so, you know, if we had to go back to New York, or if we had to run at Keeneland or elsewhere, then we're certainly prepared to do that. So we'll try to do what's best for the horse and hope that Santa Anita gets all their problems worked out.
Yeah, and the big news coming out of Santa Anita this week, the open letter to the industry from the Stronach Group, and stating that there will be no more race day medication allowed at Santa Anita and Golden Gate. Jerry, your opinion on that particular statement?
Well, my opinion is that hasn't been settled. So, I mean, I'm in Arkansas, so I shouldn't comment on the meeting that they had yesterday, but I think what I got out of it was that the guys were saying that they didn't want to run without the Lasix. So, you know, the other medications, I think there could be some compromise on that. But, I mean, I don't know. You know, there's always problems no matter what business you're in. And so they need to, everybody needs to get their problems solved and agree on this. And so, I mean, I don't see why it can't be worked out. Everybody remains calm and be sensible about everything.
Yeah, and there's something obviously needs to be done here, Jerry. There's no doubt about it. And they spent a lot of time over the past several weeks looking at that racetrack, inspecting the track. They've closed the meet down, essentially, and even closed the track to training for a couple of weeks there. So in terms of the racetrack itself, were you noticing anything different about that racetrack than you have in the past?
Well, you know, I probably lost the best horse that was out there that got hurt, Battle of Midway. It broke our heart. You know, he was, part of the core of our barn. Yet, you know, I can't point my finger and put it on any particular problem that they were having with the racetrack and blame them. So, you know, we went with Battle Midway right after the break, like we tried to do with all of our horses, and keep them on a good solid racetrack. And we don't ever train. We work some second after breaks, but never third or anything like that. So my opinion is, and this is just my opinion is that we had drought in California for several years, and I think the guys got used to taking care of the racetrack the way that they did there for several years, and then we got hit with the heavy rains, and I think they tried to do a good job. I think they tried to make all the right decisions and do the right things, and some of the things they did were wrong, but I don't think that it was particularly their fault. That's just my opinion. You could talk to other trainers, and they have a different opinion. But, you know, if you want to really look at reality, probably there were a few more breakdowns than usual. But, I mean, you know, you have athletes in any sports, and including the horse racing sport, you have athletes, and there's going to be injuries no matter what. And, you know, sadly, there were catastrophic injuries, some of these ones, and including Battle of Midway. And, you know, it's easy for somebody to say, well, it's part of the game, and I won't say it like that. But, I mean, if you're going to take flesh and blood and put it out on a racetrack or take people and put them on a football field and or a basketball court, then you're going to have injuries. It's just there's no way around it. Some of the injuries are devastating, and, you know, that's when everybody is on the same side.
Jerry Hollendorfer here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jerry, on a more positive note, good luck this afternoon in both divisions of the Rebel, and good luck getting down that road to the Kentucky Derby yet again.
All right, we're doing our best.
All right, Jerry Hollendorfer here on HRN. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, he is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. You know, Jerry brings up a point, Jude, that injuries are going to happen in any sport. The problem is, it's not the injuries that are happening in horse racing. It was the catastrophic injuries and the fact that 22 horses had to be put down because of these injuries. Very, very infrequently in other sports, thankfully, do you have a situation where an athlete perishes because of the fact that he had a significant injury. We've seen it occasionally. You know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. comes to mind immediately, people like that. But the difference is that in our sport, so oftentimes or far too often that those injuries are catastrophic, and that's the, you know, that's the rub.
Well, really, yes, it's horrible when it happens.
Horrific.
It's the physiology of a racehorse, you know, contributes a lot to that, how their body operates and you know, how their legs are, and there's really no getting around it. Horses are going to get hurt just like basketball players, football players, baseball players. And, you know, by and large, it comes as a surprise. I mean, you heard Jerry say it with Battle of Midway. I mean, there's absolutely no way he's going to take a horse like Battle of Midway and take him out there if he's not
right,
planning on him working well.
100%.
You know, and then something like it was kind of a freakish injury as well. So, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen on any given day. And it gets blown out of proportion sometimes. People die every day, horrific deaths. It's just what happens. I know, having been in the industry as a trainer for 20 years, I can tell you everybody works hard to see to it that their horses are in the best possible shape. The track maintenance people work to make sure the track's in the best possible shape. I mean, there's a lot of money on the line. There's a lot of interest in the sport. There's a love of the game. I mean,
and a love of the horse.
And the love of the horse. I mean, everybody loves the horses. And it's unfortunate when a horse gets hurt at any level.
Yep.
But you just have to take a step back. And I think right now everything's like at a fever pitch, and there's a lot of misinformation, like on Twitter and stuff. There's people commenting, they have absolutely no idea what they're talking about, absolutely none, and they're putting tweets out there and inciting other people, and it
happens with every issue today, though.
Yeah,
that's not just this happens with every issue with social media.
It seems like it's exacerbated in horse racing, and I think everybody needs to take a deep breath and let Santa Anita handle the racetrack, and they're going to do obviously everything in their power to make sure that's the safest racing surface that they can.
We're going to have some additional thoughts coming up beginning of the second hour. I'll share my thoughts on that open letter that the Stronach Group sent out to the industry. There were a couple of things that I say, okay, I agree with this. And there were a few things that I say, Absolutely not. And we're going to have that coming up 9 o'clock Eastern. And then we're going to be joined in the second half of the show by Matt Haggerty of the Daily Racing Forum, who has been covering this story, and he'll fill us in on the latest developments there with that situation in California. But when we come back from this next commercial break, it is time for our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. We'll visit with Jake Ballas. Yeah, he's been buying horses and running good horses for a long time. He's our Industry Star of the Week, and he's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Foaling season is underway, and the highly anticipated first foals for Champion Classic Empire are here. Breeders are seriously impressed with the quality, size, and bone he is putting into his progeny. Early foals include a very athletic colt who is out of a half-sister to Champion Merit Beholder, as well as leading sire Into Mischief and Ashford newcomer Mendelssohn, bred by Team Valor International, and a quality first foal out of Sweet Saturday, a half-sister to Exaggerator, bred by China Horse Club International. Hurry and call the team at Coolmore to get your mare booked to Champion Classic Empire before it's too late.
Racing at Gulfstream.
Racing at Gulfstream Park is heating up with world-class horse racing during our championship meet every Wednesday through Sunday until March 30th. Catch top-class graded stakes action and great wagering opportunities every week. And be sure to get your tickets now for the $1 million ExpressBet.com Florida Derby on March 30th. For our full racing schedule and to learn more about upcoming events, visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Alter Nation was the co-second leading second crop Kentucky sire with five black type stakes winners, nine black type horses, and well over $2.5 million in earnings. Alter Nation counted Grade 3 Super Derby winner Limation and Gulfstream Stakes winner Alter Moon as tops from his first crop of runners. Already this year, Alter Nation has the brilliant filly Serengeti Empress, easy winner of the Grade 2 Rachel Alexandra Stakes at the Fairgrounds. By Distorted Humor, millionaire, graded stakes winner, Alter Nation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pin hooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
Palace, City Zip's fastest son and his only multiple Grade 1 winner at stud.
And here's the wire. It's Palace, the winner. And Palace dazzles here.
Palace's first crop have been popular at the sales and are now creating a buzz in Florida as two-year-olds. Look for them selling this spring at OVS and Basic Tipton Gulfstream. Palace, standing at Spendthrift Farm. Eligible for the Safe Bet Program in 2019. Call Spendthrift today to learn more. Eddie Woods is the perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple Grade Stakes winners, including 26 Grade 1 winners and four champions.
Big Brown bounding home!
Midnight Luke could not have been more impressive.
This is a scintillating performance from Lady Eli.
And look at this guy go. Instagram.
Galilean, who will put on another impressive display.
A passion for hard work that produces big-time results. Find your next winner at the Eddie Woods Consignment. Visit eddiewoods.com.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Maximova turns for home on the lead. White Rose finds running room. Eastern Bell is closing on the outside. Evidently is down toward the rail. White Rose, Eastern Bell, they go by Maximova. And here comes Regardet on the far outside. White Rose, Eastern Bell, Regardet not getting to them. It will be White Rose and the Glens Falls. Over Eastern Bell, Regardet was third, and Lady of Gold finished fourth.
Larry Colmus with the call of the 2015 running of the Glens Falls at Saratoga. White Rose getting the victory that day. It was a special one for owner Jake Ballas, getting to the winner's circle there at the Spa. Always a special thing. And Jake has been involved with this sport for a long time and has done things the right way in this sport for a very long time. And because of that, he is our Industry Star of the Week. This segment presented by our friend Stuart Morris and all of his consignments you can look for across the country at all the major sales. We'll tell you more about that in just a minute. But Jake is with us now. Jake, you're coming off of a great sale at OBS where you purchased maybe a future star in the sport. But let's start by welcoming you to the program. And good morning, my friend.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a passion of yours. I mean, this has been in your family, the sport of horse racing, for a very long time, but this has been a passion. And as I say, you have done things the right way over the years here in the sport. Take us back to the beginning. Where did that love of horse racing begin for Jake Ballas?
Started when I was around six. My father owned Groovy, who was a sprinter in New York. And that's how I used to go fly to New York all the time and when I was just a little kid. And when I graduated college, my graduation present was to go to Saratoga for a week. So we rented a house, and I was just by myself for a week up there. And I linked up with Angel Cordero, who 4 or 5 years later bought us joining the dance, who took us to the Derby in 2009. And it all just kind of pretty much started back in 2008 for me, with him being our first purchase.
So what was that experience like, going to the Derby with your first horse?
Well, it was a lot of fun, obviously. We brought 42 people, you know, all family members, friends, and the bad thing was it made me think the game was pretty easy. You know, you buy your first horse, the next thing you know, you're walking in front of 150,000 people, and it's the time of your life. And so I got hooked then, and, you know, we've been trying to get back. We were close with Cigar Street 2 years later. But it's one of the most difficult things to do in any sport, is just to get to the Derby, you know, let alone win it.
Yeah,
that's our goal. That's what we're going to keep trying to do.
We talk about that a lot on this program, Jake, that just to get a horse to the starting gate in a maiden race is a huge accomplishment. People don't realize how difficult that is. Forget about trying to get to the Kentucky Derby, where only 20 horses can run. That's the odds in doing that are so stacked against you, it's not even funny.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even know what the odds are, but it's almost impossible. And it's a numbers game. And even so, you see, you know, the Darleys and, you know, all the big farms who have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of horses every single year. You know, they don't make it. And, you know, you buy one horse and get there. It's pretty surreal. But, again, that's what everybody's goal is in America. And we're going to keep plugging away, and hopefully one day we'll get in the starting gate and get a win.
Well, you bought a promising youngster at the OBS 2-year-old in training sale this past week, a son of Race Day, who stands at Spendthrift Farm. Talk to me about this youngster.
Well, Race Day was in the sale at Windstar after Kellen Gorder had him, and I bought him off Windstar and sent the horse to Pletcher, and then he went on and, you know, won 700-something thousand. And so I'm very biased towards him, which was not the reason I purchased this horse. It did help a little bit. But this horse went 9-4. He went out 33, which is really fast. But at the same time, I'm not a huge gallop out person, mainly because you don't really know the fitness levels on each horse. You don't see him train every day. So a horse could have missed a couple works, blah, blah, blah. And, we're buying off of a surface at OBS that most of us will never run on, which doesn't make a lot of sense either, since Polytrack's only in a couple areas. So it's hard to buy a good horse, in my opinion, off the Polytrack. But I love the horse's physical. He was very well balanced. He just looked like an athlete. And at a 2-year-old sale, you can kind of just forget about pedigree. As you see, there was a horse by the Big Beast that brought $850,000. So pedigree really is not a big issue at a 2-year-old sale. It's a performance-based sale. So if you breeze well and you look the part, most horses are going to bring good money. So I watched this horse's breeze. The gallop out was very good. Like I said, he just looks like a runner, and hopefully we're going to give him about 30 to 45 days off just to settle down, which I think a lot of horses, majority of them, need after a 2-year-old sale. So but Race Day was very good to me. I bought this one, and I actually owned a piece of the half-sister to Race Day in the sale that we paid $75,000 for, and she sold for $250,000. So Race Day was very good to me all around this past weekend and when I purchased them the first time.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to be a loyalist, huh?
I don't know. That's what they say. I'm gonna ride the train until he's bad, I guess.
Well, Jake, listen, you're a class act, and really appreciate you spending a few minutes on this segment with us here this morning. Again, this Industry Star of the Week segment presented by our friend Stuart Morris. And if you're looking to buy a good racehorse, we encourage you to visit the Stuart Morris consignment. He would like to thank their owners, clients, and his team because their success squarely because of you. And Jake, I know that you've had a great ride in this game and really appreciate the visit here this morning. We'll look forward to catching up for a longer period up the road.
I appreciate it. I hope so. Thanks, guys.
All right. Jake Ballas here on HRN, our Industry Star of the Week. Hour number two coming up next. Stay with us. We're back with that right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's these two, 1-2 down to the finish. Enabled and Magical, and they're well clear of the others. Racing royalty, Enabled and Frankie Dettori. The Arc winner is the Breeders' Cup Turf winner, too. It is Justify in front. Good Magic on the outside, tenfold. Bravazzo, Justify, he's unstoppable. He won the Preakness.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Monoboy Girl is 16th to go. Blue Prize, Wildcat finishing well on the inside. Then comes Midnight Pizzo. Monoboy Girl has won the distance. Justify from Gronkowski. He's just perfect. And now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Rolling on, Mike Penna, Jude Feld, that's Baron and Pontiff in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you back with us. If you missed any portion of this program or any of our shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our shows. Our interviews in the first half of the show with trainer Kelly Rubley and with Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer, and then Jake Ballas, our Industry Star of the Week, just a short time ago. Again, horseracingradio.net is your home for podcasts of this show and for all of our programming. 49 days, 9 hours, 43 minutes, and 28 seconds until the first Saturday in May. Do you have Derby fever yet?
Wouldn't be Saturday morning. Not really. I mean, I kind of do. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I love watching the horses prepare. I'm like the bluegrass. I'm really looking forward to the bluegrass. I think that's going to be a good race this year. You know, I'm enjoying it. I'm not in a frenzy about it. It's been kind of a long Derby season. It seems like because the two horses that are running today,
because I do the countdown every 30 seconds here on the program.
You know, we always have that. I'm used to that by now. I just kind of tune it out. When it gets down to like, you know, 17 days or something, I go, oh Lord,
right? Yeah,
time to get serious. But I mean, this year because Game Winner and Instagram
improbable.
Instagram, those three horses were on everybody's lips, and they haven't run until recently. Instagram was the first one to make his appearance, so it just seems like it's been dragging along. You know, I was tired of having the two horses running today on top of my Derby list, not knowing exactly where they are. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So today we get that question is answered today. I think after today, a lot of things are going to fall into place. It was very interesting to me when we had Jerry Hollendorfer on a few minutes ago when I asked him about Instagram.
Yeah.
He kind of perked up. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
He was, and he kind of agreed with my sentiment that the horse ran really well. I know a lot of people have said they thought his race was, you know, kind of dull or I don't know what they were expecting. First time two turns, first time. Or first time going long, first time it racing in months.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought considering you know where the horse was in my mind, I thought he ran really well. So it seemed like Jerry perked up then, and I think he thinks that horse has a lot of talent. So That was encouraging to me. But I think after today, we're gonna really start getting into the Derby a little bit more, because we'll know where these horses are, and we'll see where their next starts are coming and how they prepare, and that's really going to be the turning point.
Yeah, some of the top stars from the Bob Baffert stable getting back in action this afternoon at Oaklawn Park. There are two divisions of the Rebel Stakes. If you didn't catch it in the first half of the program, Oaklawn splitting the Rebel. First time it's ever been done in the history of the sport. They split the Rebel Stakes into two divisions to help out the horsemen in California who don't have a place to prep their three-year-olds now. So they took a bunch of entries. They said, we're going to divide this into two divisions. They're race 8 and race 10 on that Oaklawn program this afternoon. They also split the Derby points involved. So each division offers the winner 38 points, 15 for second, 8 for third, and 4 for the fourth place finisher. And Bob Baffert is here with his top two studs, if you will, with Game Winner, the juvenile champion, who will go in the second of those two divisions, race 10, and Improbable, who is going in the first division, race number 8. Both of those prohibitive favorites.
Yeah, and you know, rightly so. They both have excellent form, and you heard Hollendorfer talk about them and how they have the best numbers in the race. And
yep,
remember, those are two-year-old numbers. And usually, just through age and development, their numbers can increase up to 20% is the rule of thumb. So even if they increase 10%, they've got the fields over the barrel. You know,
I mean,
it's going to be interesting to see how they respond. And a lot of people, you know, think Improbable's been training better than Instagram. Or why do I keep saying Instagram? Winner.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I think they're two different kinds of horses. Improbable is a very smooth running horse, and Game Winner's more of a workmanlike horse. So I don't know if you can compare the two workout-wise, but when they get in a race, we know that Game Winner lives up to his name. He's very game, and he wins all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Again, those races coming up this afternoon, the lone points races or points race on the road to the Kentucky Derby here, this afternoon. Matt Haggerty is going to be with us shortly after 9:20 Eastern time. Matt with the Daily Racing Forum has been covering the situation at Santa Anita. So we'll get the latest update from him coming up in just a little bit. But the big news coming out this week on Thursday, the Stronach Group sending an open letter about the future of thoroughbred racing in California. And this was a bombshell. This created quite a buzz, not only on social media, but on other platforms within the industry. Everybody seeming to come out with their opinion on this situation. And Jude, I thought it was only appropriate that I share my thoughts. You may have the same thoughts. You may have different thoughts. But as I read through the letter, the one thing that struck me, and now we've had a couple days for the dust to kind of settle a little bit here after this came out on Thursday. And the one thing I didn't want to do, this letter to me seemed very much like a quick knee-jerk reaction and a drastic knee-jerk reaction to the situation that has been happening with the racetrack in Southern California at Santa Anita. And the one thing I didn't want to do was come on national radio and just have a knee-jerk reaction. So I took a step back, read through the letter a couple of times, and gave this a lot of thought. And I have no problem with the fact that the Stronach Group took this step and sent this out because of the fact that, look, you own the racetrack. This is your business. You can set policy any way you want, right or wrong. You can set the policy. It is your business. If I want to set a policy with HRN, we do it. Whether I'm right, whether I'm wrong, I can do it. But it's the same thing with the Stronach Group. If they want to set this policy, they can do it, whether they're right or wrong. To me, the thing that really has gotten most people is that, okay, they're going to come out and they're going to say they're going to take this drastic step to ban race day medication at Santa Anita and at Golden Gate, the two California tracks that they own. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't see any report published anywhere that said race day medications are the determining factor, the definite determining factor for the 22 horse deaths that we've seen at Santa Anita. Last I saw, they were still trying to figure out the issue with the racetrack surface and determine exactly what it was that was causing the surface to be a little quirky, if indeed it was a little bit quirky. So I don't know where this came from, this drastic step on the part of the Stronach Group. Again, very much to me, a knee-jerk reaction in response to maybe some outside influences in non-horse racing world, it just seemed very, very quick and a very much a knee-jerk reaction to me. And it's a very drastic step, put it that way.
Well, I guess it depends, you know, as far as the world view is concerned, it's not that drastic. As far as, you know, California racing, U.S. racing, it might be considered drastic. I mean, I think it's a necessary move in the big picture of things. I don't think the letter really has any effect or any tie to the racetrack issue itself. I think it's a totally different subject. The racetrack issue needs to be addressed, you know, manually.
I agree. I couldn't agree with that statement anymore. And I think Santa Anita was doing that, and they are doing that, right? They are
right.
They brought back their main track man, who is an expert in handling that particular racetrack. They brought in experts from around the country to take a look at the surface and to do all the tests on it. They shut down racing, so we're not going to race on this surface till we know it's 100% safe. I think Santa Anita was taking all the right steps and is continuing to take all the right steps to make sure that that racetrack is going to be safe when they reopen it. I just think that this right here comes out of left field, saying, okay, we're going to ban all race day medications.
Well,
I don't know where that came from.
I think the thing is they're utilizing this time off to make those decisions and to get things the way that they want them. And I can understand why they're doing it totally. I mean, I've been behind, you know, no race day medications my whole life. I just don't understand, you know, why we can't participate at the same level that other countries do. I think racing, the more uniformity we have in racing, the better off we are. And I'm not in the camp that thinks that we need LASIX or racing's going to fall apart. You know, there's so many sky is falling people in this world, and I just don't think it's, you know, true. So
there are two statements in that letter that I completely agree with. And then there's one inexcusable aspect to the letter that I'll get into in a minute, but the system is broken. A direct quote from that particular letter, 100% agree. The system that we have in place today in racing across the United States when it comes to medication and testing and thresholds and all those types of things and being different from state to state, completely broken. That needs to be fixed. And I know that as an industry, we've been working toward that for a long time. It just hasn't come to fruition yet. And maybe this move on the part of the Stronach group, I could be wrong. I think it will decimate the fields if they go this direction. I think the field sizes will be much smaller, which is going to lead to smaller handle. And I think it's a detrimental move to racing as a whole, but certainly racing at those two racetracks. I could be wrong. Maybe we'll have 12-horse fields when they come back to racing, and everybody will be racing LASIX-free, and it'll be a wonderful scenario, and we'll view this move as being a pioneer and a leader in the industry, and it'll lead to bigger things. I don't see that happening. I think it's going to be detrimental. But the other thing that I agree with is the final sentence here where it says, first and foremost, we must do right by the horse. When we do right by the horse, everything will follow. 100% agree with that. But how about doing right by the horsemen? And I just wonder how many of the horsemen would be on board with this concept in California. You're a former horseman. If they came to you and they said, hey, that's it, we're banning all race day medication, I know you're in favor of it, but is a lot of owners and a lot of trainers out there in California that aren't in favor of it too. So how would you feel?
Oh, I would absolutely 100% be in favor of it. I've always been. I have been my whole life. I don't understand, you know, why we haven't done it before. And a few years ago, the Breeders' Cup tried to do it, and you know, there was a huge discussion about it and a lot of infighting and whatever, and it didn't happen. But you know, I really believe it's something that needs to happen. And it probably will happen eventually, and maybe that time is now. But I think there's a lot more owners and trainers in favor of it than you may think. That's my opinion. But I know that there's a lot of trainers that are very much opposed to it, and that's their right.
Yeah, maybe so. Here's the one part of the letter as I read through this thing. And again, they can make any move they want. They own the racetrack. For right or for wrong, they can set their own policy, whether you agree with it or you don't agree with it. But here's the one part that really, really got me. There is a quote in the letter from the senior vice president of PETA. And as we know, PETA would like nothing more than to see horse racing just go away. And I think for most people that if you're not involved with PETA, you view them as being a very extremist type of group, right? Where they are so far the other direction on a lot of beliefs. And they have repeatedly come out and attacked horse racing. And they do it again with this quote. And I'm not even going to read the quote, but it is they just continue to want horse racing shut down. And to give PETA a voice in a letter like this that is so important to our sport, and to it really validate PETA and their stance and almost give approval to PETA through something like this, is to me that's a huge mistake. It's irresponsible on the part of the Straw Hat group to even put that in there, and it's not good for horse racing in any form or fashion.
Well, I don't like PETA, I don't even pay attention to PETA. So
no, but that's the thing. Most people just kind of shrug it off and say, "Okay, fine, it's PETA. They're over here, and most people are over here." But Jude, to put it into a letter like this, and to have a quote, a whole paragraph dedicated to PETA, you're basically just giving them a voice. Why would you give them a platform?
I don't know. That's the Stronach's group decision, as you said. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I think that's irresponsible. Yeah. I think that part of it is irresponsible.
Yeah. Well, I really can't comment on that or the letter. I don't know why people do what they do.
And maybe Matt Haggerty will have the answer for us in our next segment. But the other thing I want to know is, okay, if you're going to say this is our stance, this is our policy as a Straw Hat group in California, and this has been brought up by many people too, why not implement the same policy at your other racetracks, at Gulfstream Park, at Laurel, at Portland Meadows? Why not introduce it, have that same policy there?
Well, that's my problem with the whole thing, and I don't think it doesn't make a lot of sense in some ways, but in other ways it does make sense. Stronach controls both tracks in California, so again, it's kind of a state-centered thing. Also, there's not a lot of opportunities to go other places to race unless you ship, way out of state. The purses at Turf Paradise are relatively small, and at some of the southwestern tracks, it's not at the same level. So California is basically an island. We've talked about this many times. There's no you're kind of stuck there. So if you're going to do this as a test group or whatever, it's a good place to do it. I don't know that they have to, put this in effect at all of their tracks.
The way the letter reads, though, the way that the statement is made in the letter is that they're going to take the unprecedented step of declaring zero tolerance for race day medication at Santa Anita and Golden Gate, right, as a company. Why not do it across the board then?
Well,
I think that's the question most people
have.
Well,
I think that you got to get Belinda Stronach and find that out. I don't know why they wouldn't do it. I think it should be done everywhere. So I don't understand why.
Yeah, why you're going to have people on both sides of the fence that.
Yeah. So, hopefully it gets worked out. I'm not sure this is even going to get worked out in California, because the California Horse Racing Board runs racing in California.
Right.
And they can probably shut down both tracks if they want to, right?
Yeah, there's a lot to still be determined here. But this certainly has created a lot of discussion, and it was a bombshell letter that went out earlier this week. We're going to get to a break. We do have to get to this break. We're going to come back. Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum will fill us in on the latest on this situation in California. He's been covering it for DRF. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Penna here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment, along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit Tenda.com today. That's TENDA.com.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple graded stakes winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 and 3 quarter length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Bloods sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And Nick's Go is in front as they turn for home. Nick's Go on top, trying to pull off another upset here into the final furlong with Game Winner running at him on the outside. The two of them into the final furlong, and they bump there. Game Winner on the outside takes the lead. On the inside, it's Nick's Go, who fights on but will be second best as they come down to the line. He doesn't know how to lose. He's Game Winner in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Nick's Go was second. Sickleman came on for third, and Mr. Money was fourth.
Larry Colmus with the call of that Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Game Winner, the 2-year-old champion, returning to the races this afternoon at Oaklawn Park, was scheduled to come back at Santa Anita, but because of the situation in Southern California and the situation with the racetrack at Santa Anita, he, of course, will not do that. So instead, Bob Baffert sends him to the Rebel Stakes, two divisions as they've split that race this afternoon. Bob has the favorite in both, and nobody has won more runnings of the Rebel than the Hall of Famer. We'll see if he can add to that that total and set the bar even higher later this afternoon. But we are joined now by Matt Haggerty of the Daily Racing Forum to fill us in on the latest from this situation in California. Matt, we were just talking about it in the last segment. There are going to be people on both sides of this argument. What's the latest on this California situation?
Well, the latest, as Brad Free and other other outlets reported last night, is that the CTT, at least the California Thoroughbred Trainers, has decided that they will not, or that at least the negotiations between the Strona Group and them over an agreement about restricting race day Lasix is not going well, and that the March 22nd opening, if the negotiations do not resume or get resolved in a time in which you can draw entries and all that stuff, that racing at Santa Anita will now be delayed even farther into the future.
So it's the trainers group that's putting the kibosh on this. Are the trainers making plans to like go to other racetracks move out of the state?
I think everything's so far up in the air right now, and California trainers have very few nearby options that, you know, you haven't heard anyone, at least anyone that I've seen in any of the articles, say that, hey, I'm getting my horses out of here, you know, right now. I'm in Lexington. I kind of handle the some of the issues that are more legal and political and logistical and things like that. So I'm not on the ground at Santa Anita and haven't been talking with many trainers. But the things I have read, there isn't a mass exodus from California, but at the same time, where would these guys go? This is a year-round home for these guys. There isn't any place nearby that has comparable purses. When you talk about Santa Anita and you talk about California, Southern California specifically in general, you say, this is the thoroughbred industry's island. When people are out in Southern California, they're out there for the year. They may ship out to take advantage of a stakes program somewhere, but most of the people there are year-round people, so they don't have a whole lot of options.
Matt, I think the thing that caught most people off guard with that letter to the industry last week was and stating that they would ban all race day medication, which of course is Lasix in California, is the fact that there was nothing reported. Santa Anita had been doing the due diligence in terms of trying to determine what was happening with the racing surface, and there was nothing ever reported that race day medication was the cause of the 22 horse deaths that we saw over the past couple of months. So I think that's what really caught people off guard. This kind of came out of left field, didn't it?
The horsemen would say it came out of left field. People were trying to figure out, what the cause was for this rash of breakdowns, if there is even a cause other than the fact that horses are fragile animals. And so, they were definitely caught off guard. And you're right about one thing. I mean, I don't know many people that have a very good argument for the fact that use of Lasix on race day is a contributor to breakdowns. It's kind of a separate issue. So dragging this issue into it at the time when, everyone was in crisis mode out there, had the effect of just splintering the whole community out there. This is a very controversial topic. This is a topic that has not been resolved in the racing industry despite decades of debate over it. So having this issue brought into it at that time certainly seemed to increase the amount of tumult at Santa Anita.
Is it the kind of thing where it was opportunistic to make this statement at a time when the track was closed and kind of either a deflection or just let's get it all done at once type of thing?
Yeah, I think this is kind of out of the first page of the crisis playbook. That if you do have something that you want to put through that is controversial, you use a crisis to take advantage of that. And so I think that's rubbing people the wrong way. This doesn't seem related particularly to the problem at Santa Anita of horse deaths. And I think that's where you're seeing a lot of the debate and discussion, is that if we were trying to figure out why horses were dying at this at a rate above the baseline rate, then what does this have to do with it? So it's certainly not helping things out there. That's pretty much all I can say. Is there a way forward? I've heard some, you know, trainers and horsemen say maybe there's a phase-in we could work with here. But those phase-ins that have been tried in the past, say starting with two-year-old races, are limited to say two-year-olds, and then, you know, getting the grandfathered horses out. Those haven't worked in the past either. Breeders' Cup tried this in 2012 and 2013. You know, that didn't work. The American Graded Stakes Committee was trying to enforce force a rule that would basically say that, okay, two-year-old races in beginning in this year can't get a graded stakes designation unless Lasix has abandoned them. They abandoned that after only a year. They probably should have had more horsemen involved in these discussions before the letter came out. And it doesn't help that the letter included some things that were trying to search for the right word here, but did not paint horsemen in a very good light.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of the horsemen are getting upset here. It seems to be as if a lot of the blame is being put on the horsemen here, instead of, you know, kind of having the Strawneck Group and Santa Anita share the blame. But look, in terms of what they were doing with trying to take care of that racetrack, I think, Matt, they were making every right move in terms of trying to determine exactly what was going on with that track to prevent this from happening as they reopened and we moved forward. And I said this in the last segment, the Strawneck Group has every right to set their own policies. And if this is the direction they want to go, agree or disagree, they have the right as the racetrack to set that policy. The Horsemen's Group also have their right to come back and say, okay, well, that's fine. We're not going to play under those rules.
Right. Yeah. And they actually have a law that helps them out there. There is a kind of weirdly worded law that says that if there's any change in basically drug policy affecting race day, affecting the races themselves, that they can't go forward without an agreement with the horsemen. So, you know, they do have this rule on their side. You know, Santa Anita is obviously free to do whatever they want, but they also need horsemen to race there.
You know, the other thing that has people up in arms about this situation is the fact that they've declared this policy only at the two California tracks and none of the other ones, Gulfstream, Laurel, Portland Meadows. They have not taken that step at those racetracks. Should people be up in arms about that matter? Is that just a knee-jerk reaction on most people's part?
Well, I do think it illustrates that they're not willing to go all in on this. They're asking one group of horsemen to play by a different set of rules than the horsemen at their other tracks. And we have seen this in the past. You know, one of the big horsemen complaints about the side that wants to ban race day Lasix is that you're perfectly free not to run on Lasix. And yet some of the loudest voices that say we need to ban race day Lasix continue to race their horses on Lasix. You can say that, well, I want a level playing field on that, but very few of the people on that side have kind of put their money where their mouth is, and that weakens their argument. And the same thing is happening here, that if this is such an important policy for horse racing in general, why isn't it being implemented at other tracks? Now, Santa Anita, I think, is in a very special situation right now. They are also in a state in which the animal rights and animal welfare movements are much stronger than in other states. So you can see why they did want to limit it. And plus, they want to limit the disruption at their other tracks. This is a, you know, privately held company. It's currently embroiled in a kind of nasty family dispute. And so they were probably saying, let's just get it done in Santa Anita, because we think that this crisis has kind of put people over the barrel. And then perhaps down the road, maybe implemented at the other tracks. You also have the special situation that we talked about before, where horsemen don't really have a whole lot of options. And I don't know about you, I've relocated for my job, you know, 3 or 4 times. It's not an easy thing to do, to leave behind your former life and start a new one in a new place, especially for some of these guys that have been there for decades.
You know, I think it's a unique situation, too, in that they only have one other place to race, and that's Golden Gate Fields. And obviously, it's certainly the fact that Santa Anita's closed has certainly helped the fields and the quality of racing at Golden Gate. But there's really no place else to go around there. You mentioned it at the top of your segment with the purses and the quality of racing at some of the other locations that would be more readily available for California horsemen are not really suitable. So I think,
yeah, and Golden Gate's still running on LASIK, so I don't know if you saw their card yesterday, but every horse but one on their 8-race card got administered LASIK yesterday. So it just seems like this thing was hastily put together. It seems like some constituencies that aren't especially fans of racing had a much bigger say in it than the actual horsemen. I think that's rubbing people wrong. In the letter, you had a quote from a senior vice president of PETA, which basically accused horsemen of trying to kill their horses. I don't think that helped at all. It's turning now into something that was at first a struggle by everyone involved in the racing industry there to figure out what was going on, to try to stop this terrible spate of deaths. And now it's split the racing industry out there so that they're no longer focused on this goal. And I think that's a tough way to try and get progress on the issue that's really facing the racing industry right now.
I'm talking with Matt Haggerty of the Daily Racing Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Matt, just a couple of minutes left before we have to get to our final commercial break here on the program today. Ultimately, where do you see this ending up, say, 3 weeks from today, 2 weeks from today, when they finally try to get back to racing? Where are we going to stand at that point?
I just do not – I don't have any way to predict what's going to happen out there. It's evolving so rapidly. You have so many different constituencies out there, jockeying for position to for lack of a better term, to make sure that their positions are considered. And it is evolving so quickly out there. Now, could they, come to the problem is, I think you've had both organizations now are drawing a line in the sand, and they're drawing a line in the sand on LASIK. I don't understand why this is the issue. The racing industry now is completely losing focus on what they should be concentrating on. I don't see with the language that was used in the letter, I don't see them backing down. They have called the Strona Group, they have called the use of LASIK something that is contributing to horse deaths. How do you back down from that position? At the same time, you have horsemen who say it's not only not contributing to horse deaths, it's a humane medication to give to horses on race day because horses bleed. Both sides are arguing the same result, that they're on the side of the angels here. So, how does either side back down? I can't predict what's going to happen here. I really can't. The letter itself just came together really quickly. There were parts of it, including the bullet points, that weren't very well communicated, I guess you would say. There was one part that said increasing the ban on legal NSAIDs. I don't know what increasing the ban on a legal something means.
Well, you know, Matt, there's
to get together.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways that this can play out, and I really appreciate you kind of sharing your thoughts and filling us in on the latest that you've been able to decipher from this situation. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll get that to you, and really appreciate the visit here this morning, my friend.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, Matt Haggerty, Daily Racing Form here on HRRN. Time now for our monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon. Had a chance to stop out there last month and bring you kind of a little bit of insight into what you can expect when you head out there for a tour, and caught up with Al Young, and he got a chance to talk to me last month about their process board and the process of making Four Roses Bourbon.
All right, Al, we're at the second stop along the tour here at Four Roses. We're looking at the storyboard, which tells the story from the time that pretty much the grain is incepted. It goes all the way through until it becomes bourbon, right?
That's correct. You know, all of our grain is non-GMO, and that means that people grow it specifically for us, as well as anyone else that's not interested in having anything that's genetically modified. So our corn comes out of the center part of Indiana. Our rye is coming out of Western Europe right now, and our malted barley is coming out of the western part of Canada and the United States. Very important you start with good ingredients. If you don't start with good ingredients, you can't be sure that you're going to have a good product.
Okay.
So after the grain's inspected, we put it into the cooker, and in the cooker we'll be doing some atmospheric cooking to reduce the starch that's in the grain into a sugar. Then once we mix it with one of our five proprietary yeasts, we can make bourbon.
Okay, gotcha.
From the cooker, it will go into the fermenter. We have two different kinds here that we'll see in a few minutes. One is Red Cypress. The other is stainless steel. And, you know, as Red Cypress begins to decay over time, you have to replace it. And it's an endangered species right now. Or probably for a long time.
No kidding.
So we had to replace it with Douglas fir.
Okay.
And then after the fermentation process has been completed, we'll send it through the still, where we'll take the alcohol out of that mixture that was created by the yeast eating that sugar, and come out at about 132 proof. Then it goes into a doubler, which is will look like to you like a giant tea kettle, and raise that proof to 140. And then one of the very important aspects of the whole thing is it will all be collected into a tank, and that tank has to be sampled for quality approval. Once it's been approved, it rides in a tank truck down to Cox's Creek, and there it will be put into the barrel after it's been cut to 120 proof. Then it goes into the warehouses, and it stays there until it's ready to be put into one of our different expressions of Four Roses Bourbon. You know, by the way, in addition to Four Roses Bourbon, Four Roses Small Batch, and Single Barrel, we have another one coming out very soon that will be a small batch that will be put out unfiltered. And it will come out at 104 proof, and it will be a mingling of several of our recipes, some of which are kind of new to the market in
terms
of being put together. And we're really excited about this brand extension. In fact, this is the first time in about 12 to 13 years that we put out another regular expression of Four Roses that'll be available for some time to come.
Okay, and what's the hopeful launch date for that new product?
We're going to be right here in the spring.
Okay,
it's going to be sometime very, very soon.
Good, good. Well, I can't wait to check it out. When the product goes into the barrels that you mentioned, how long does it stay in the barrels?
Well, actually, it stays in the barrel until the aging process is completed. And what's it called for? Usually a minimum of 6 years, could be a little bit less depending on the development of the product. And we think that our whiskey does its best between 6 and 8 years old, but some of them take a little bit longer to age out.
How about the new product? How long will that one take to age out?
That will be anywhere from 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
Very special barrels for that product.
Okay, a lengthy process, and it's all part of what makes Four Roses so special here in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Yeah, let's move on to the next stop.
Let's go for it.
All right, then that next stop on the tour comes your way the third Saturday in April. Stay tuned for our next Four Roses Bourbon segment and that continued tour of Four Roses. We're back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Broken Vow continues to deliver rock-solid results. The top 10 Son of Unbridled has sired nearly 150 black-type stakes horses, 75 black-type stakes winners, and over $71 million in earnings. Among those sired by Broken Vow last season were Chocolate Martini, winner of the Grade 2 Fairgrounds Oaks, and Life in Shambles, winner of the Grade 3 Fall Highweight. Sire of Eclipse Champion Champagne Room, Broken Vow has sired additional Grade 1 winners on Bridled Bell, Rosalind, Sassy Image, and Cotton Blossom. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Eclipse champion Blame was considered by many as the breakout stallion of 2018. His top runners included Grade 1 winner and Eclipse Award finalist Marley's Freedom, plus Grade 1 winner Fault and graded stakes winners Maraud, Beyond Blame, Miss Kentucky, and Blamed. His yearlings sold up to $500,000, and his sensational daughter Fault brought $1.2 million at the November sale. Outstanding results, outstanding value. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Capizano, what a performance. Capizano races away, leaves Thunder Snow in his wake in the late stages, and Capizano for Barcelona. Capizano is going to win by 8 lengths.
Capizano, the son of Darley stallion Bernardini, will have his sights set on the $12 million Dubai World Cup following that dominant 9.5-length victory in the Grade 1 Al Maktoum Challenge Round 3. That was this past weekend, and he defeated last year's Dubai World Cup winner, Thunder Snow. And that makes Capizano your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Bernardini is the sire of 20 Graded Stakes winners on dirt since 2015. Only Tappet has more. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Don't forget, there's no better way to follow racing, breeding, industry news, and more than with Bloodhorse. There are so many platforms in which they bring it to you. Their website, bloodhorse.com, is the thoroughbred industry's go-to site. You have the Bloodhorse Daily app, the Bloodhorse Magazine, and, of course, their social media feeds as well. It's all there for you at Bloodhorse. Visit bloodhorse.com. All right, JT, a couple of minutes in this quick segment here before we get to one final commercial break, but we thought it would be a good idea to kind of get your thoughts and have you share your thoughts on the Rebel Stakes, two divisions, race 8, race 10, heavy favorites, both trained by Bob Baffert in each one. If they don't win, who's most likely to win those two divisions?
Well, I think in the first division, the eighth race, Galilean is the horse that probably has the best shot of upsetting the apple cart. He's going to have to improve a little bit, as his trainer told us this morning. But he's won his last two by open lengths. There seems to be more in the tank. I know he's been beating up on state breds, but I think he's got the most blue sky of any of the other horses in the race. I thought Extra Hope might have a chance for Richard Mandela and Long Range Toddy. Those are the top contenders, but I think Galilean has the best chance of beating Improbable if he can get beat.
All right, how about the second division, which will be race 10? You have the Juvenile Champion Game Winner, heavy favorite, 4-5 on the morning line in his three-year-old debut. If, for some reason, he doesn't fire his best shot, who picks up the pieces and wins?
Well, I think you got to look at Omaha Beach because there's not a lot of speed in this division, and he's a very quick horse. And Mike Smith gets aboard today. He might be able to take him all the way. I wish Pratt was riding him because he's done well on the horse, I believe. But Gunmetal Gray is the other horse. I think I was really impressed with his last race to Mucho Gusto. He really didn't have any chance in that race whatsoever, and he ran a huge race to be second. So I think those are the two you have to beat. But I would be most afraid of Omaha Beach because I could see him making an easy lead and maybe going all the way.
All right, there you go. If you're looking for an upset in either of those two divisions of the Rebel Stakes, you can maybe look toward those horses. And don't forget, you can visit our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the weekend stakes preview presented by Naira Betts, where Jude and Anthony walk through all the stakes races coming up this weekend. In addition to those two divisions of the Rebel Stakes, it's all there, horseracingradio.net. We're back with more. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
In Kentucky, our biggest celebrities have four legs, and thanks to Kentucky Proud Horse Country, you can now have unprecedented access to these equine stars. From foaling barn to finish line and beyond, you can see it all. Log on to visithorsecountry.com to book your one-of-a-kind experience. With more than 30 horse country locations throughout the Bluegrass, you'll get access to multi-million dollar farms and facilities featuring Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown winners, famous broodmares, and champion sires. Space is limited, so book now at visithorsecountry.com.
Power. Caraconti has won. Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by a barren neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Caraconti, a son of Bernstein out of a Sunday Silence mare with five-time champion Miesque as his third dam. Caraconti recorded three Grade 1 victories while earning more than $1.9 million. A precocious juvenile, Caraconti recorded a Grade 1 win at 2 before taking the prestigious French 2000 Guineas at 3, followed by an electrifying stretch run in the Breeders' Cup Mile to defeat older horses with a final time of 1:32 4/5. First crop yearlings by Caraconti sold for up to $220,000, and his first two-year-olds impressed at the OBS March sale, with a filly breezing in 9 4/5 seconds and selling for $365,000 to Breeze Easy LLC. Caraconti, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Attending this year's Kentucky Derby, experience the true difference at the official Derby Hotel of HRRN. Say hello to a brand new hotel experience from Hilton that's vibrant, affordable, and young at heart. It's energetic, yet relaxing and comfortable. It's completely unprecedented. It's completely true. Enjoy modern amenities and quality comfort with guest rooms featuring a 55-inch flat-screen TV and 150 channels of DirecTV, along with a free breakfast, a state-of-the-art fitness center, and more. Discover affordability without compromise at Louisville's True by Hilton.
Airdrie Studs' Summer Front is poised to skyrocket to national sire prominence with his first crop of two-year-olds in 2019. A multiple stakes winner at 2, this talented son of Warfront went on to win her place in 12 graded stakes with lifetime earnings of more than $1 million. With an explosive turn of foot, Summer Front routinely recorded times of a mile and 33 in some of the best grade 1 mile races in the country and possesses everything it takes to be an important sire for years to come. Airdrie Studs' Summer Front. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Foaling season is underway, and the highly anticipated first foals for Champion Classic Empire are here. Breeders are seriously impressed with the quality, size, and bone he is putting into his progeny. Early foals include a very athletic colt who is out of a half-sister to Champion Merit Beholder, as well as leading sire Into Mischief and Ashford newcomer Mendelssohn, bred by Team Valor International, and a quality first foal out of Sweet Saturday, a half-sister to Exaggerator, bred by China Horse Club International. Hurry and call the team at Coolmore to get your mare booked to Champion Classic Empire before it's too late.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Getting ready to wind down this busy two-hour edition for you here this morning. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And want to say a special thank you to all of our guests who made this show possible, including trainer Kelly Rubley, who kicked it off in the first half of the show, talking about Always Mining, who goes to the post in this afternoon's private terms at Laurel. Exciting three-year-old gelding there. Jerry Hollendorfer, the Hall of Famer, was with us at 8:35 Eastern. Jake Ballas followed him as our industry star of the week. And Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Form here in hour number two, talking about the situation with California Racing. did we cover enough ground this morning, JT?
Yeah, man. I want to go back to the Four Roses bourbon.
Yeah, that's right. Our friend Al Young with that segment there for us as well. Our road to the Kentucky Derby, beginning again in earnest with the Florida Derby here in just a couple of weeks, will be live at Gulfstream Park on Saturday, March 30th for all that coverage. Then we get right back here to Keeneland. You've got the Bluegrass, the Wood, the Santa Anita Derby on April 6th, and we're off and running, my friend.
Yeah, lots of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, all kinds of good stuff here on the network. We encourage you to visit our website, horseracingradio.net, to see a complete schedule, complete list of affiliates, and SiriusXM channel information. And, of course, to listen to all of our shows, they're there at horseracingradio.net. And don't forget to follow at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Our thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, to Chauncey, for handling all of our social media. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.